From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. This past weekend, Brazil held the second round of its elections. Far-right candidate Jair Bolsonaro walked away with about 55% of the vote, which means that he and not Workers' Party candidate Fernando Haddad will be Brazil's leader. For more on that, we spoke with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, via Skype Monday. Well, Tony, in this election, again, we're hearing that same narrative here that this shows that the, you know, the right has won the hearts and minds of the population there. But in fact, the context for this election is a coup that removed the last elected president, an election governed by the coup government, and that included disallowing, over the objections of the United Nations, among others, the most popular politician in Brazil from participating. Other than that, it was a model of democracy. Oh, yeah, with press in the hands of the oligarchy and also standing by at the ready in case there's a bad outcome, a judiciary in the hands of the oligarchy.
Yeah, that the election result in Brazil is very bad news in every sense. And I had some optimism right up to election day, because a couple of days before the election, there was a poll published that said that there'd be a technical draw, that Fernando Haddad, the progressive candidate of the Workers' Party, was within just a few points of Jair Bolsonaro, the right-wing candidate, and that turned out to be wrong. And so, and Bolsonaro won by a margin of around 10%. He got something like 55% of the vote, and Fernando Haddad got around 45% of the vote. So it was a good win for Bolsonaro, but as you say, it's essentially just a continuation of the coup that took place against Dilma Rousseff back in 2016.
Right.
And the thing about Bolsonaro is, and we mentioned this in a previous conversation, Don, Bolsonaro played a campaign very similar to the Mauricio Macri campaign back in 2015, when the right-winger Mauricio Macri won the presidential election in November 2015. He deliberately avoided debate. He was extremely vague about a lot of his policy proposals, but anybody paying attention to his record, and he's not an inexperienced politician. He's been in the Brazilian legislature for over 20 years, I understand, but always at a very low level as a deputy. And the way he came to international politics as a presidential candidate was very much, it's obviously, although he campaigned as an anti-system candidate, this is what we said before, and it's true, he's very much backed by the most powerful, wealthiest elements of the system, and in particular by the elements of the Brazilian elite that favor the United States and the influence of the United States.
Right.
So, how come this extreme right-wing candidate got elected? Partly because he was fuzzy on his policies, partly because he was able to take advantage of the deliberate campaign targeting, overwhelmingly targeting left-wing politicians and blaming them for Brasilia's culture of corruption, which is the exact reverse of the truth, because Lula da Silva and Dilma Rousseff were two people that were of great integrity that worked to try and change Brazil's culture of corruption. So, and it's just the height of ironies that Lula da Silva should be in jail on trumped up corruption charges that they couldn't prove.
Right.
And he's in jail on the basis that a judge suspected that the allegations may be true.
Right.
That's why Lula da Silva's in jail. So then Bolsonaro was able to capitalize on that, claiming that he was some kind of squeaky clean figure that would also root out corruption. And he made this appeal as the a kind of the strong man. The Brazil needs a strong government, a strong leader, in order to be able to root out corruption. And he also played very much to the Pentecostal evangelical movement that's very strong in Brazil. And a very right-wing message that seems to chime with those with that religious ideology. And so he had a massive support at grassroots on that basis. And he also had, there seems to have been a coalition of support by the right wing who had, all the elites, although they might have had misgivings about Bolsonaro, all the right-wing elites in Brazil supported him because they were determined to keep out the Workers' Party candidate.
Right.
And so the fact that Haddad actually got around 45% of the vote is an incredible achievement by him, right? So
yeah, right.
It shouldn't be viewed, the election results shouldn't be viewed as a complete defeat of Brazil's left, because despite all their failings that they themselves acknowledge, they actually mobilized and got out around 44-45% of the vote.
Right.
So then, so Bolsonaro engineered his election, supported by the right-wing elites and of course by US money, and also by US advice. And I think Steve Bannon was supposed to advise Bolsonaro's campaign. Bolsonaro is very close to Marco Rubio. So they're all, the other big element that enabled Bolsonaro's success was a very similar social media campaign to the social media campaign that attacked the Nicaraguan government back in April this year.
That's right.
And the way those campaigns work, they're kind of like a social media blitzkrieg, a kind of massive attack with one aim in view, sending very unified, coherent messages, smearing the left-wing candidates, making all kinds of false accusations. And in fact, even the Brazilian Electoral Authority, which is far from progressive, I am totally in the pocket of the right wing in Brazil, even the Electoral Authority there had to censure Bolsonaro's campaign for using fake news to smear the left-wing candidate.
Right.
But obviously much too late. And the way that works, and I think I wrote this to you in a message, the way that works is, if they get their timing right, and they did, the psychological effect of that social media campaign lasts for about a month.
Right.
And then it starts to dissipate. So they peaked at the right time, and Haddad just didn't have enough time in order to claw back perceptions before the election day. So anyway, that's how I see Haddad's defeat and Bolsonaro's win. So shifting to what that means in domestic and geopolitical terms, and in summary, you can say geopolitically it means a very serious shift in Brazil's position vis-a-vis the United States and vis-a-vis its BRICS colleague countries, the Russian Federation, People's Republic of China, and India. Because Bolsonaro is totally allied with the United States foreign policy. He is going to do everything that the United States elites through the State Department that they own will ask of Brazil. So the US has got, I kind of couldn't have got a better result in geopolitical terms. Now, what will that mean in terms of the development of the BRICS institutions? Well, it'll probably put a brake on further development, and certainly on the pace of development of the BRICS institutions. It may affect China's investment in the transcontinental railroad is scheduled to start. It starts from the Peruvian port of Ilo, runs through Bolivia, and then it was supposed to run through southern Brazil and come out at the port on the Atlantic coast at the port of Santos. Now, will that happen? We don't know. But that feeds back into the domestic politics. And what are the domestic politics going to be under Bolsonaro? Well, I'm by no means any kind of expert on Brazil, but it seems to me that there are several obvious things that are going to happen. One of the things that's going to happen is that there's going to be a certain element of inertia, because in the Brazilian Congress, the Workers' Party is still the biggest party, but that doesn't mean very much in a country where you have over 30 political parties that make up the composition of the Brazilian legislature. So it's a constant battle of alliances. In Argentina, if you look at Argentina, what happened in Argentina when Macri won? Macri, in theory, was in a minority, but he was able to play the internal politics in Argentina to get enough opposition deputies to support his legislative program, which he was able to put through, not entirely successfully, but with a good measure of success. So we may well find that Bolsonaro is in a similar situation, perhaps more adverse than Macri, and he may find it harder to push through his legislative program insofar as he has one, because it's not at all clear what his policies are, except that he said that he's determined to try and push through economic reforms, and he'll privatize anything that's left of Brazil's public sector. But that privatization process and the any possible threat to the Chinese Continental Railway brings up the issue of how far are the Brazilian elites, who recognize that in economic terms, the United States has lost the global game economically and is in decline, whereas China and the Russian Federation and its associated economic allies in Southeast Asia in particular, but not just in Southeast Asia, are going to be the dominant force in the global economy.
I wanted to go there. Because let me interrupt you for a moment, because there's a couple things that I want to sort of focus on the way to where you're headed. First is, you mentioned Argentina and Macri. And we saw, right after that election, you and I both said, look, the course that Macri wants to take the economy on is back to the future. It's exactly, it leads exactly to the conditions that led to Nestor and Cristina taking office, and, complete rejection of the right wing, because it led to economic collapse. And we see that Argentina has been galloping towards that exact outcome. And you have also not quite as profound possibilities, perhaps, as Brazil with the Transcontinental Railroad. But Macri early on went and paid homage to China in Beijing, recognizing that, and obviously an expression of the elite's understanding that, hey, we can make money with those guys too, and so let's not just write them off over ideology. And, coming the other way from China, the same way that Hugo Chavez had advocated locally, China's win-win doesn't contain any ideological tests. It's like, look, we can make money together, we'll do business with you, whoever you guys decide your government is, whatever you decide your economic system is, that's your business, here's the contract, you want to go. And so if you have the same dynamics, look, Brazil is already elevated on par in a political sense with Russia, China, India, and South Africa with the BRICS organization. It's hard for me to imagine that the elites there would just walk away from the potentiality that holds for them. So you have all of this kind of as context for what you're talking about. I just wanted to flesh that out a little more.
No, that's absolutely right, Don, and that is where I was going, because what that means is that while the right-wing elites close ranks around Bolsonaro to keep out the Workers' Party candidate Fernando Haddad, now they have to get down to the business of defending their own interests against somebody who is hostile to them.
Right, including against competitors in Washington and Wall Street. Fine if you guys will help us loot the country, but when it's time to split up the spoils, don't be reaching in my pile.
Right. And so, as part of the private, what is the biggest privatization prize in Brazil? Of course, it's Petrobras, the right. national oil company. And the pre-sal oil deposits are just off the Brazilian's Atlantic coast. And they are a huge prize. I don't know how big they are in terms of overall oil resources, but right. they're a huge prize for anybody who can get their hands on them.
Yeah, you know, and also just one more point. I'm sorry, I hate to keep it, but there's some things here that I want to flesh out because most people aren't aware of these things.
No, that's good.
Even as they private, say they were to turn around and privatize or further privatize Petrobras, okay? On the one hand, privatizing it so they can get their hands on it and benefit from it is one thing. Privatizing it and throwing it out in the open market where they get trashed by the international oil private interests and Wall Street finance and all of that is another. And they may find that imposing some sort of citizenship or other things that essentially would look an awful like a lot like nationalization to the outside world, that keeping those kind of restrictions on it may operate to their benefit. And so they may not cut it completely loose where it goes out of reach for the next government and the next one.
Well, yeah, I'm Petrobras is pretty much in that stage at the moment under the Temer government.
Right.
So and if Bolsonaro's struggle will be he can't just privatize Petrobras by decree. He'll have to put some legislation through the Brazilian Congress,
right.
and that's where what we were talking about earlier about
right.
the kind of inertia that exists in Brazil as the result of the multiplicity of political parties that in necessitates endless horse trading between
right.
the different parties as to whether a particular piece of legislation gets through.
Right.
I don't know how similar that is to the United States. I should imagine it's quite similar, but except that in the United States, you've only got two parties.
Right.
And in Brazil, you've got over 30.
Well, there's only one class that dominates in the United States, or one small slice, and there's probably a more diverse membership among them, like cousins instead of brothers and sisters, elite, and it's not as concentrated in Brazil yet, because it's an earlier stage of development.
Right. So then, that issue is one that's going to divide the Brazilian elites, and you can see that, and why, and we go back to earlier conversations that we've had about events in Brazil, for example, when that guy Da Cunha, who was the guy that engineered, he was the head of the lower house, I think, in the Brazilian Congress, and he engineered the coup against Dilma Rousseff, and then about a year and a half, 2 years later, he himself was sent to jail. Now, he wouldn't have gone to jail without the approval of some part of the Brazilian elite. So that part is likely to be the United States allied part of the Brazilian elites, who have worked so hard together with the United States to infiltrate the Brazilian judicial system with people like that guy, is it Mora, the relatively low-level judge who is in charge of the prosecution against Lula da Silva, and he's an archetypal product of the kind of judicial education programs that the United States has been funding for well over a decade, getting on for 20 years now in Latin America, and so the fruits of all that investment in training local people in U.S. ideology and to serve U.S. ideology in different spheres, in this case, in the judicial sphere. They've also got very extensive training programs in criminal investigation, in police police and security measures. All those fields have been dominated in terms of Brazil's technical cooperation with the United States by a deliberate policy of producing people who will serve U.S. interests, right? So and these, all these USAID and National Endowment for Democracy and International Republic Institute and National Democratic Institute programs are designed to produce people who will help the United States get what they want in Latin America and the Caribbean. And you can see that in Brazil. And Bolsonaro is very much part, although I don't know if he's actually a product of the old school of the Americas, what's now called WINSEC. I'd be very surprised if he wasn't. But that's where he's from. And that's why he's such a close ally of the United States. And he's publicly said that he's a great admirer of the United States. And so, and you can see from what we now know about his relationship with people like Marco Rubio, exactly what his role is. But in Macri's case, and that was bad enough. But now you've got somebody like Macri in charge of Latin America's biggest economy. And one of the biggest economies in the world. So, in terms of social policy, Bolsonaro has promised to crack down on the left wing, crack down on anybody with left wing opinions. He's very, very clearly an anti-feminist character, somebody who wants to go back to traditional family, the role of get women back in the home, yeah. And adopting the traditional role of women in the home, you know.
Curious for a guy who's married to his third wife.
Right, and also he's very anti homosexual, anti-gay people, anti-lesbians, right. And just totally socially retrograde, yeah. In that sense. And he's also racist.
Yeah.
And so, he's anti-people.
Here's some things, for example. He wants mandatory birth control for the poor. I mean, he didn't exactly say, but he describes exactly that. He says, I wish Brazil had a family planning program. Only a rigid birth control can save us from chaos. It's not even worthy to talk about education when most of these people, right. Referring to the poor, are not prepared to receive an education. We need to adopt a rigid birth control policy.
Yeah, on education, on healthcare, yep. He's just going to cut everything in that the public sector makes available to people, and that people like Dilma Rousseff and Lula da Silva before her have worked so hard to build up for ordinary people in Brazil, for the impoverished majority in Brazil. So he's going to, his job, it's the classic role of a US ally. He's going to attack the poor.
Right.
Because that's what United States policy around the world is. It's to attack the poor. Right. And so, the other area that he's going to attack, apart from all those things that we talked about, and the labor unions, for example, he's going to attack the labor unions. He's going to attack the Movimiento Sin Terra, the people that are struggling for just land reform in Brazil. But he's also going to attack indigenous people and the environment.
Right.
And all of that, it remains to be seen how much of that he can do by decree. There'll be a certain break on his domestic policies from what we were talking about earlier in the Brazilian the situation in the Brazilian legislature. But do you remember when we were talking about Argentina early in 2016, and the question then we were asking was, and what will happen when their policies fail?
Right.
Their policies have now failed in Argentina.
Right. You have the IMF basically saying that, like, we're back to the future already with the IMF.
Yeah. So, but what one of the answers to our question has been, we've had part of the answer, and that is the judicialization of politics so that they lock up anybody,
right.
Who's likely to be a potential candidate that could win as a potentially, right. Successful candidate.
Yep.
So, that's part of the answer. But the other part of the answer we're going to see under Bolsonaro with a vengeance. To some extent, we've seen it in Argentina. Increasing levels of police repression, for example. But under Brazil, under Bolsonaro in Brazil, you're likely to see a much increased militarization of internal security that we've already seen under Temer, where he's militarized parts of big cities like Rio de Janeiro and Sao Paulo,
right,
attacking low-income areas, mainly populated by people of Afro-American descent. We'll see that increase, and there'll be a much higher level of violence against ordinary people in order to impose Bolsonaro's repressive policies.
Right.
So, and if what does that mean in terms of regional politics? It means that in Venezuela's case, for example, Brazil is likely to do things like militarize its border with Venezuela, just to put more pressure on the government of Nicolas Maduro. And Bolsonaro will work very closely with Iván Duque, who's his right-wing fascist soulmate there, right, in Colombia, president of Colombia, Duque.
Right.
So Brazil, it's not clear. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Brazil's policy towards Cuba.
Yeah, for sure.
And Brazil may well become more hostile towards Cuba. Even under Temer, it hasn't. Brazil's foreign policy has been very consistent towards Cuba.
Well, again, you've got some competing, factors here, ideologically, absolutely. But if Cuba is, there's been an opening towards Cuba from other quarters, Brazil, I'm sure the Brazilian elite considers itself one of the, heirs apparent to, the main brokerage chairs or whatever with the international community. In other words, hey, yeah, do business with Cuba. Bring that business right here and we'll take you over to Havana to talk to folks. In other words, I don't know that they'll turn their back on the business that's going to be coming into Cuba just for the dollars.
Yeah, you see, the thing about Bolsonaro is that he's an ideologue. He's not a pragmatist. And
right,
Temer is a pragmatist.
Right, but the people behind Bolsonaro, it's sort of like going to be sort of like watching a tug of war between Hitler and the Krupps, or something. The Krupp family that was one of the big industrial families that was ended up also as one of the enablers and backers of Hitler. There's a tug of war because they think they own everything, including the dictator, and the dictator thinks that he's running everything. And it's going to be kind of like that, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm not so optimistic. I know that sounds to me a bit optimistic. I think Bolsonaro is totally in the pocket of the United States.
Saying that it's going to be like Hitler is optimistic is a pretty bad statement on your assessment of how things are going to turn out.
It's that. I think people need to understand that Bolsonaro's election is extremely bad.
Yes, that's for sure. It's for sure that it was accomplished. Again, I don't think it's a measure of public sentiment whatsoever because it's a really rigged game.
And if you look at that, and it's a bit like the situation in Honduras. And if we've got time, we should try and talk about the migrant caravan heading towards the United States.
We only have about a minute and a half, so let's go there right now. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and the thing is that what Bolsonaro is going to do in Brazil is what Juan Orlando Hernandez has done in Honduras, apply a very extreme right-wing policies that make life impossible for ordinary people and force people to migrate. And that's why there's a caravan of Central American people from Central America, mainly from Honduras, heading for the United States border in Mexico, although Mexico has said that it will take care of them. But what you're likely to see in Brazil is a lot of internal displacement because Brazil's such a huge country that people migrating to get away from the effects of Bolsonaro's policies are likely to just move internally in Brazil to areas where they stand a better chance.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough time for everybody involved. And all right, Tony, thank you so much. We'll take a little deeper dive into some of the other things next week. I wanted to make sure we covered this election in Brazil. And thank you for your time and your expertise. We appreciate it.
Okay, you're very welcome, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.